All right, so Jonathan and Kevin, thank you guys for jumping on the show. We appreciate it. How you doing?
Doing well, man. How are you?
So just so people can match voices, go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do in Urban Heat.
My name is Jonathan Horstman, and I am the vocalist, guitarist in Urban Heat.
And I'm Kevin Nakan. I do synths, guitar, a little bit of vocals, in Urban Heat. I'm like the utility guy.
The jack of all trades guy.
Master of none.
Yeah.
And
a true master knows he's never actually a master.
True.
And we're missing one member.
Yeah, Pax. Paxel Foley, P-A-X. He plays bass, synth. Overall, good guy. Just a really good guy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Shout out
just,
to Pixler.
Just love that guy.
So you guys are, what would you call yourself? It's kind of like synth pop, dark wave, a mixture of, there's like some little bit of goth in the vocals there.
I always say that we exist at the intersection of dark wave, synth pop, and post-punk. I actually just stumbled across like a Reddit thread that was like, how is Urban Heat considered goth? And it was really interesting to see the different kind of genres and subgenres that we were kind of thrown into. But I think for right now, at least the music that we've released so far kind of exists in that sort of space.
Yeah, I definitely, I would put you in all three of those categories easily. Like lyrically, you have very fucking dark lyrics at points in songs, you know what I mean? And that's, it's very gothy to me. Dark sounding, it's gothy sounding. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that. Yeah. People get really strange about genres.
Yeah,
though,
subgenres too. Get real weird and diluted.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell really who's what
well,
anymore.
For some folks, unless there's like a jangly, kind of chorused out guitar, then it's hard for them to like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, oh, if it's goth, it has to have. But then classically, like all of the like quote unquote goth bands have said very strongly that they are not goth bands. So.
Right.
You kind of, that's sort of like the rite of passage also is to sort of deny being in that genre.
Right.
It is strange.
I think for a lot of people, the ownership part comes from like an identity kind of thing that they're like, you know, tied to that so much. I think for us, like we were literally in punk bands before. So it's the term post-punk. And I know it's more of an era of like late 70s, early 80s, because a lot of the art bands that were creating what would be later known as punk started doing something else. So that became post-punk. But like for us, we really didn't come into it thinking of a particular genre or quote unquote scene we'd get accepted or be a part. A lot of it had to do with Jonathan's way of writing songs and then the type of equipment that ended up being used was so similar to a lot of those acts in the late 70s and 80s with like Lindrums and analog synths that the sound just kind of came that way naturally. And then his deep like baritone voice kind of lent itself to a lot of those like pairings where people would say, oh, this sounds like, you know, Bauhaus or something, you know, or Depeche Mode or something, you know. So a lot of that just kind of just happened, to be honest.
And that's, you know, that's where I think a lot of people have like that punk rock background and then they just deviate to different genres or they just, you know, everybody likes different shit and that ends up coming out, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
I think
no
that's,
doubt.
I think that's, you know, real fucking cool. That's what like the podcast, why we do it. Ryan and I fucking are into so many different styles of music, you know what I mean? It's not, and it's like the genre thing's kind of, it's just hard to define, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I really, like for me, I get a little taken back by people who are only into one type of music because I, as much as I get it, it's like they found their thing, you know, and, but like that identity thing, like makes, you know, I feel like they're in it for different reasons. Cause if you love music, you can find something that resonates with you in any genre and
totally.
Like there's good shit in any type of music, any kind of creative, you know, sound that any artist, you know. So, I mean, to each his own,
yeah.
But I love so much different music. I think we all came to the table with passions for so much different music and genres that, like, the fact that we're doing this is just it's kind of fun to like do something that we can kind of play around with different things, you know?
Oh yeah, all the
Absolutely.
different
And
sounds and layers and everything. Yeah, that sounds great, man.
yeah, because if you know, there's footage out there of backstage dance parties with like Twin Tribes and Vision Video and stuff, and these like very much like very considered, accepted as goth bands, but like the way that we all blow off steam and everything backstage is like it's not always goth music, you know. Everybody's just there's music for different moods and for different times.
Yeah, I enjoyed the ballad on the new album, actually. At least I kind of took it as a ballad, you know?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite pieces too. Say the words.
Yep. Track
Yeah, I
eight.
think
Yeah.
it's got one of my favorite moments on the record for sure in it.
Sounds like this album I felt like was a lot more synth heavy than the first one. And I don't know if you
So
guys did
far,
anything differently or not, but.
did yeah, like he said, so far. Go ahead, Jay.
were you able to hear the whole, did anybody send you like the whole record, or have you just heard the singles?
Yeah, they sent the publicist sent us the record.
Oh, dope, dope. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of synth going on. It's also to be honest, I didn't use I hadn't started using on the first record. I wanted every synth sound that was on there to be to be an analog synthesizer, right? And we were limited by that palette, and it was really cool and fun. And this last record, Arturia has their whole effects collection, and their recreated sort of digital
Modeled.
synths. Yeah, they're modeled synths. And I really, it's kind of like what Kevin had said with the sound itself, like because of the instruments that we were using kind of shaped that first record. And so I think the sound kind of has evolved because of that, also like just embracing what we are able to do digitally with the modeling.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, how can you not take advantage of it? You know what I mean? It's
Right.
endless.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Plus, it's a lot cheaper to have all those plugins versus trying to
All right.
track down the actual equipment.
And
Like,
don't
some of that
even get
shit's hard.
started
Yeah,
trying to
right.
tour with that kind of gear and stuff.
Oh my
Oh, yeah,
God,
let
yeah.
alone. Yeah, I didn't even think about taking all that shit on stage,
Fuck yeah,
man.
you'd need your
Holy
own.
fuck.
You
For
need your
one,
own
this.
dedicated trailer for that, for sure.
Right. And they're very expensive machines now, you know,
Yeah.
and
Yeah, and fragile,
instruments.
and
And
yeah,
like one,
definitely.
yeah, exactly. Fragile. One little thing goes wrong, and you out of a few grand, you know.
Yeah, definitely not cool.
I watched this thing on Apple Music or Apple TV called it was that Mark Ronson thing that had I can't remember the name of it, but it had an episode about how like synths were invented and stuff, and it was cool to see like going back to when they were first made, how there was just like dials playing with frequencies, and then it came to be like into an actual machine, and just the lineage of it was really cool to hear about.
Yeah.
So when did you guys start Urban Heat?
I think 2019 was sort of like the beginning of everything, right before the pandemic.
Okay.
I had a bunch of songs that I wanted to play and came to Kevin, and he was like, packs would be perfect for this. And we kind of like grabbed packs and kind of forced him, to jump into it. And yeah, and then the pandemic hit. And so I kind of just went into the lab. I went to North Carolina to quarantine with my wife's family and brought a bunch of recording equipment out there, because I wasn't going to let the pandemic sort of stop me from making this record, and just kind of focused on recording those songs and connecting with an online audience, because that's the only thing you could do during the pandemic. You
Right.
know, we couldn't go out and play shows, and that's how I had always thought of when you think of promoting a band. Like, I hadn't really jumped onto the social media sort of aspect of things yet, and so just really, or at least I didn't utilize it to the best that it could be utilized for a promotion, just sharing art. And yeah, so just dug into that until we were able to start playing again. And when things opened up, we just kind of hit the ground running. We were able to connect with enough people online during the pandemic that people actually cared about what we were doing. And we had some really great opportunities just right out the gate as soon as shows came back. And yeah, we wasted no time in just like getting out there as fast as we could. None of us are, you know, we're not spring chickens. We've done this for a really long time with other projects. And we knew that with this band, we wanted to take everything that we had learned from all those other projects and actually apply it, you know? So we didn't want to be just a local Austin band. We didn't want to just be focusing on playing those shows, which was, you know, the stuff that came up through the pandemic and the importance of connecting with a fan base online kind of has stayed with the project. And yeah, so from 2019 to what, 2024, it's kind of, it's 5 years, but we had that period of arrested development where, you know, the band hadn't, we weren't really, really active as a project until, I guess, 2021, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. That looks like when the first full length release was out, was around then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you guys do, if anything, differently on this new record? Like, did you use a different studio or different equipment or writing process a little different?
Yeah, that's a good question. The writing process is pretty.
Jonathan had a moment where he was channeling something in some black magic chamber and got all these songs and recorded them. When we got back from a tour in, what was it, like 10 days? So yeah, that's how it happened.
Yeah, the first record was like trying to figure out our sound, sort of, and just writing songs over the course of, you know, 6 months to a year. And then the second record was then informed by that process of putting a record out and connecting with people and spending so much time on tour that, yeah, we got back in December of 2022 and just ended up, I just kind of dropped a record and yeah, it was about 10 days, kind of wrote and did most of the tracking for it, had those demos done. What we've always done is, you know, our demos, I would demo things in the home studio and then a lot of those sounds we would keep when we went into a studio with a producer. The Wellness album was produced, well, they've both been co-produced because the band is so hands-on with it, but we had Jonas Wilson out of Bastrop, and he, so interesting that you talked about the synth sounds on the second record. So Wellness was produced by Jonas Wilson, who he is a guitarist and producer. And I feel like Wellness has a very Austin sound. He has a very Austin approach to music where it's very guitar driven, guitar based. And you're always thinking about how things are going to shape around the guitar. At least in my opinion of the way that a lot of Austin producers produce. We went to LA to work with a guy named Ben Greenspan on this second record. And he's somebody he's produced rock, but he's also done a lot of hip hop. And so that was something that we wanted to do. We wanted to think about the low end. We wanted to treat some of the production more in a hip hop way and less of a rock and roll way to kind of get more of a modern sound. And so I think that probably has a lot to do with it being so much more synth forward on the tower.
That's interesting that you mentioned a hip hop producer, because there are some dirty fucking sounding drums in there. You know what I mean? And that makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, well, we also brought in Aaron Steele. So Ben wanted to bring some acoustic drums on it. Excuse me. I've always liked doing acoustic hats. I'll use a drum machine for our kick and snare. And then I like getting into the studio and actually playing the hats so that it's got a little bit more movement to it. And Ben wanted to take it one step further and actually layer acoustic drums with my electronic drums. So Aaron Steele, and he's worked with Haley Williams from Paramore, and
he was in
most Portugal recently,
Man for a while.
Yeah, he's done some stuff with Harry Styles. Like, he's probably the most impressive resume of anyone we've worked with by far so far. And it was really cool. We got to sit with him for a week in a studio here in Austin, and just watch somebody with that much talent kind of drum to our stuff. And it's interesting because the way that he's able to blend it, I feel like the energy is there with the acoustic, with the live drums, but it still has like a very electronic sort of, it's still rooted in electronic music.
I can definitely hear it on the first track, Take It to Your Grave. The hi-hats in there sound natural, and I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, it definitely has a unique sound, and now that you said that you do it that way, it's makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like hats, I mean, there's some songs where you definitely want the hats to just be perfect, and you know, I'm thinking about like we're going like very like 80s industrial sort of like goth club, you know, you want that people know how to move to a song based on. Everybody thinks about the kick and snare a lot, but like I think the hat and the feel of a hat is something that gets overlooked in the way that it shapes the song. And
yeah, like swing of it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And just like where you throw the accents and just the human element to it gives it this rawness, which is not necessarily, you know, better or worse. It's just a different flavor.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool sounding record, man.
Thank you so much.
I just like that it's so much fuller sounding than the previous, like, and everything that you said just now makes a whole lot of sense as to why. So as far as like inspiration wise, did you guys have anything that you were looking to, like, as far as older music when piecing together your sound?
Honestly, for the tower, we didn't know what it was going to sound like. We didn't know first. We didn't know it was going to be called the tower. We just knew we were going to have a record. I had demoed like 30 or 40 songs that kind of, some are more in the synth pop sort of dark wave sort of thing. I think I was trying to do a certain thing because we had been touring, and kind of put in this sort of genre. And I think I was like, okay, like, what does that crowd want to hear? And I was trying stuff, and I don't think that any of those really worked in it. And it, I wrote one, it was You've Got That Edge, which is funny enough, like probably the most like pop sort of accessible sounding song on the record. I wrote that one, and there was something about it that just had some teeth. And I liked that it blended. It went from synth pop. And then it also had like the halftime breakdown and like big guitars. And I felt like that song gave me permission to go so many other places genre wise with the rest of the record, to kind of bring in some of that post rock and the big guitars and stuff. And I was kind of just letting it drive itself. So I was raised without, I wasn't allowed to listen to a lot of music growing up. And so when it comes to influences and what I'm looking at, I think the ways in which music that I've heard has influenced my writing, I'm not super conscious of. Kevin is a lot better at articulating sort of where some of those influences have come from and what they are. Because for me, I just try to just write what's in my head. Not necessarily like it's when I try to do something that's like, oh, let me do something that's like Nine Inch Nails meets this, meets that. Like sometimes that works, but also like, I don't know.
You just gotta be you, dude.
Yeah, it boxes you in.
Yeah. Yeah. I just gotta, basically what I do is I pull up a session, find a drum sound that just like, I'll start with a drum sample that just slaps to something that just sounds really fucking good. And then I'll pull up some bass synth sounds, find something that sounds really nice with that. And then just kind of fuck around until there's something that just feels right. And if I go back to that session and it becomes a song, then awesome. If I go back to that session and like, it hasn't become a song within like 30 minutes, I'll just never touch it again. I don't like to like slave over it. It's just like, if it feels like I have to fight for it, I won't work for it. I'm like always going down the path of least resistance when it comes to
songwriting. Now, do you have like a melody in your head when you're looking for that drum sound, or do you have words?
No. At least when I'm doing like an exercise, sometimes like I'll hear like a whole thing. Like if I'm driving in the car, I'll just let the road noise and just hear the static of the road noise, and then just try to hear melodies and sounds in that, and do like a voice note or something, and then go back to the studio and try to recreate what I was hearing. And then other times I'll just start with that drum sound, just like purely empty palette, and just see what comes.
That's amazing, dude. Incredible.
I think that works well for your writing too, though, because you're not recreating an old sound. Even though, you know, you can always take a sound and compare it to this, that, and the other, but everything that you're coming up with is what you're feeling at the time.
I think it's important to do that when we're doing stuff, that writing music that like is obviously paying homage to stuff that's been made before, you know, because otherwise it's going to just sound so contrived. You know, I think there's a lot of bands in lots of genres, right? But like they get themselves so bogged down by, we are this kind of a band and our sound is this, that their shit just kind of, it doesn't sound inspired. Like they do a really good job of doing an impersonation of like a goth band, right? But it's not something it's nothing that I'm going to remember.
Yeah, they're not pushing anything. They're not innovative. Like you just said, there's a million bands and a million genres that.
Easy way to say that would be is there's a million goth bands that sound like The Cure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Or that's always a mercy. Like that too. Like if you're not pushing the art forward, just like move out the way, because there's a lot of other people that want to innovate and keep things moving forward and not just get stuck like recreating things. You know what I mean? That happens across any creative field. I mean, look at film, where like for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years, there's been this like rut of like, you know, and there's things that break through, but there's been like nothing but recreations. You know what
I mean?
Dude,
if we weren't doing music, like, we'd be doing movies, and we're with you 100%.
Yeah.
It's been aside from a few, it's been fucking.
No, it is always like crazy.
It's insane, dude.
We're just force fed remakes, really. But yeah.
Well, totally.
But music can be like that too, though.
But I feel like, you know, because all the good writing stuff moved to TV, you know, and series writing, which we've got some incredible series over the last 20 years. But the big screen has suffered because of it.
Yeah, the blockbuster kind of died.
Right.
I think people rely on that character development more across seasons versus just like maybe a couple movies.
True.
But I don't know. I love movies. So to me, like, I wish there wasn't the rut.
Right.
Well, like we're talking
about music, you know. I wish music that, you know, we had more. And there's just so many acts. It's so oversaturated, you know, that it is hard to find. But there are groups, I think, in every genre that are pushing the genre forward, you know, in ways that, you know, in the past was, or at least in the recent past wasn't happening, you know.
That's why I mentioned the layered drums earlier, because it's there's so much replay value in this record to me, because I always every time I hear something different like in there, you know what I mean,
where
usually that's not the case. I mean, you know what I mean, it's like usually Darkwave is pretty like straightforward, you know, like an 808 and that's, you know what I'm saying.
That's really cool to hear. Replay value is something that I feel like is
very important.
Underestimated by an artist, like, because like you don't want to make something so catchy that the first time you hear it, it's stuck in your head and there's no more. Like you can't just keep going back to it, because it's like you absorbed it all in those first couple listens. You know what I mean?
Where you just burned it out
more
quick.
Depth. Yeah, you can like keep going back to, and like you said, discovering new things.
Yeah.
You would think, but there are people out there that are still listening to the same stuff over and over and over, no matter
that's the thing. Because everybody, we all listen to music differently. You know what I mean? So like, I think ideally the perfect song, or like you want to strike that balance of like earworms for people who do just want to like simp out on a song and just like go, go, go. And then also like people who are going to go deeper with it, like you want to have like what you said, like the replay value, you know. And if you can have earworms and hooks, but also like production and a way of doing things where you've got, you know, little gifts, little ear gifts here and there. Like, I think that's what you want to try to do.
Yeah, like a good happy medium in between.
Mm-hmm.
So the title for the record, you said you didn't know it was going to be called that. Does it have some sort of significance or a story behind it, or is that just what you guys decided on?
Yeah, no, so I had gotten a tarot reading, and the tower card wasn't pulled during the reading, but as I was leaving the coffee shop, she was like, hey, I just pulled one more card for you. It's the tower, and people are really scared of it, and but this is what I pulled. Take it, you know, do what you will with that. And then the tower kept kind of coming up. It's kind of this, it's this scary card, but it's about the force that like brings about change. And I was just, yeah, it just felt right. It felt like we were in a tower sort of like season. And I wanted this record to be that sort of, yeah, I wanted it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, like the force that brings about change as far as like for us personally, but also for this band, artistically. You know, the tower isn't something that's just, when you interact with the tower, like, you know it. You know?
It doesn't sound like you fear it, so it's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, I should fear it, probably.
Oh, man, ride it.
I mean, he made an album out of it.
Exactly.
So.
Right. Yeah.
That's probably the
That's also why we chose August 16th as a release date, because numerically this 16 is the number of the tower in tarot. So we had to look at what Friday this year fell on the 16th. And I think there were two. There was one date that wouldn't work, and the next one was in August. And we asked the label, like, hey, do you guys have anything, you know, what's going on August 16th? He's like, we don't have any releases. So
that's pretty good, man. Like, right before back to school, that's like a good time to release. Yeah, I always thought.
I think so too. Especially like you got, I mean, back in the days, like people used to release in December because it was like Christmas.
Yep, yep.
But also November and December because you'd get all those sales. Obviously, that's not the case anymore. But also for year end reviews, something that's still fresh, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like that could be like considered, you know. That was definitely like a ploy, I think, a lot of labels do, where it'd be like, okay, we don't want to give it to them in February because they're going to forget about it by December, you know what I mean? Or January when they're making like year-end reviews and best ofs and shit.
Yeah, when movies are trying to get Oscars and shit, I think they do the same thing. Yeah,
they do
the
same thing, yep.
I never thought about it with movies. I mean, I've thought about it with music 100 times, but yeah, it does make sense to be in that kind of middle ground because I always keep a list of things that I think are going to be on my end of the year list because we do like a wrap-up episode at the end of each year. Because if I don't, like something came out in January, like you said, I'll forget.
Totally forget.
Yeah, the best stuffs will be from like November.
It'll be like February. And you get the last 3 months out of the year and people are like, well, what about the rest of the year? I'm like, oh yeah, forgot about that. So I always write them down because otherwise it'll space my head.
Yep.
And then just narrow them down at the end of the year. So touring, you guys, it looks like I was pulling up tour dates here. You guys go on start touring. Well, you already played a show, but you start really going out pretty much next week at the time of recording this, at least.
Yeah, next week we're going to drive out to Dallas. We have a festival. We will have 2 weeks back home to kind of finish up our tour prep and really just hammer in rehearsing this record. And we'll fly to Terminus, a festival in Canada. We'll fly up there while our merch guy drives the van to LA for the El Rey show, the like real kickoff show for the tour. And then we'll fly in from Canada and land in Los Angeles, where we're actually shooting like a small documentary, which is really cool. A guy kind of reached out, and this is something we had thought about doing kind of a live. We wanted to do a live at the Roxy record when that show was at the Roxy, but the promoter, due to ticket sales, switched us to a bigger venue, which is the first time in our careers that that's happened, which is really, really cool. So live at the El Rey won't have the same, you know, je ne sais quoi as live at the Roxy, but we'll take it. And a documentary filmmaker reached out and he'll meet us at the airport and shoot for the next couple of days. Yeah. And then we are just off to the races for, I think we got 3 weeks, and then the record release show in Austin. We have a little bit of time off, but sort of flying out each weekend to do festivals, then hit East Coast for 3 weeks to a month, I think. We'll have 3 days off when we get back to Austin, and then we fly to Glasgow to start support for Mahlschott Doma for 6 weeks in Europe.
And you guys are putting in the grind. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, we thought we were workhorses the last 2 years, man. This next 6 months is going to make that seem, make that seem easy.
That's great.
You guys are playing with, sorry, Jeremy.
Oh, no, go ahead. You're probably going to ask almost the same thing I'm about to anyway.
Maybe. You guys are playing with Drab Majesty in September. Is that what you were going to ask?
Yeah,
really?
Pretty much.
Okay. Sweet.
Because that's awesome.
Yeah. Is that in, in Cold Wave? Oh, yeah, in Chicago.
Yeah, I was just looking up that lineup, and like Clan of Zymox is there, and Drab Majesty.
Yeah, we
just a whole
just
bunch
played
of
with it, Clan of Zymox in Houston.
That's not horribly far away.
What, Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask what's close for y'all on the list, if anything.
Let me look. If there's a Detroit day, that'd be the closest. But
there will be. There is, right?
Yeah, if it's not announced yet, there will be. So, like, a bunch of the dates, because of some of these bigger dates, we aren't able to announce the smaller ones. Okay, yeah, so we do have a Detroit one. Awesome.
I don't suppose you know what venue you're playing at off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head, no, but I have my computer out. My organizational skills, I'm a musician. And my keeping all of this organized is a skill that I'm going to need to get better at.
Is your dinner table your filing cabinet?
No, it's my studio table. The one, the desk there that the music's on is also like everything else. Yeah, I don't have Wi-Fi where I'm at right now. I'll come back to you.
Cool.
Someplace Smalls or something? No, I could look it up too.
If I can make it, I'll definitely go. But September 30th is my kid's birthday, so we'll see. Maybe I'll bring him with me.
There you go.
Is he going to be able to drive then?
My kid? No.
Yeah, no.
14.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we're at Smalls. September 29th.
Oh, that's sick,
at
dude.
Smalls. Is that a cool venue? We like it?
Yeah, that's small. Or, I mean, you know, in a good way. In a good way. It's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not like
it's personal.
A fucking huge theater or something.
No, I love that.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're both big fans of Drab Majesty, so like I was just scrolling through your tour dates to see, and I was like, oh shit, they're playing a Drab Majesty show. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, we haven't seen them live yet, but I've been looking forward to
Crew World or Dark Ways.
Oh yeah, they were at Dark Waves.
I've seen like videos of them live, but never actually in person. And some of their like live videos that they do, just like a sort of a tiny music desk thing, but not an actual tiny music desk where it's just them two like in a room and they're playing something. Those videos are crazy. Like just the sounds that they get out of their music.
Yeah.
Plus, they're just weird and interesting looking. So
yeah, they're cool.
Yeah. I love that demonstration album.
They've got the aesthetic.
Would love to interview those guys, but I don't know if they even talk.
Right.
Kind of like one of those trying to talk to Buckethead things.
Like a Daft Punk thing, yeah.
Yeah. So that's all the United States and Canada. Have you guys done like Europe or anything over on that side?
No, this will be our first time.
Okay, cool.
This is the first one.
Even in previous bands, that's the first time you've been over there?
You know, I in high school, I sang in competitive like choral groups. And I sang in Austria and Germany. But I was 18, and I honestly don't remember any of the trip.
Sounds like you probably had a good trip then.
I'd imagine so. Yeah. I remember I bought a butterfly knife.
Those are cool.
But I couldn't take on the planes.
Yeah,
I
was
going
to say, there ain't no way you're going to get that back.
Mm-hmm.
Just ship it to yourself or something, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the album art that you guys have, did you commission somebody to do that or have somebody in mind to do it? I was trying to, I only have a small picture of it, so it's hard to get. Like,
yeah, and that's all me. I do most of our graphic design.
Nice.
Saves us some money. And, but the problem with that is like with my ADHD, I feel like the visual identity of this band has gone so many places in the last 3 years. Cause we're just like, what about this? What about this? I think there's some elements that we like and that we're sticking with though, but who knows, you know, the next record, we might go like a very, very, austere sort of, you know, right now I'm doing a lot of textures, a lot of, collage and like ink. There's an artist called, I forget his first name. His last name is Drexler though, but he's this collage artist that I was really inspired by when wanting to create the cover. I think it's Jesse Drexler.
Jesse Drexler.
On IG, he's got. I looked at his stuff. I was visiting a friend in LA, and she had a coffee table book of his work, and I briefly just like looked through it and was like, "Oh, this is it. I love this." And Jesse Drexler, JesseDraxler. His stuff is just, for me at least, it's, I find it really, really inspiring. So yeah, I just, and that's kind of why we did a sort of this collage of images on the tower. And then we also wanted, we wanted to represent that the tower is sort of behind us, that we've gone through this tower moment already instead of looking at the tower. And so on the cover,
Almost looks like it's like through a looking glass type of thing.
Yeah, it's so when you unfold the whole, so you won't be able to on the CD or the vinyl because it's not a multi-panel thing.
Right,
it's just the sleeve. But the CD, the insert, if you pull out the insert and you open it up where you can see the front and the back, it's like an old, it's like a classic car. And it's the rear view mirror on the passenger side.
I can see that now. Yeah.
We kind of did that cause we had used that. What was that thing? Was it a 64 Cadillac in the Goodbye Horses video? Kevin, do you remember what year that thing was? We used this, I think it was a 64 DeVille, but I want to, if we can continue the classic car aesthetic with this band, I'd like that only just for the selfish reason that I would like to rent and drive more cars like that DeVille.
Yeah, I would honestly be guilty of that too.
Yeah. It's like, if you can, like, yeah.
I'm on the website.
You can,
man,
find an excuse.
The original Tower T, Last Chance.
Yeah. So that was commissioned by Ben. Oh, I got to get better with these names.
That's really cool.
Tattoo artist out of the UK that we Ben Rose.
Ben Rose.
I saw their work just scrolling around online looking for tower images, and I was like, oh my god, this is awesome. And they cut us a really great deal to be able to use the image. Yeah.
So I was just looking, and I have sort of an off topic question, but a curiosity question. Did you guys have like cologne? Did you make that yourself, like pick all the scents out and everything, or did you just have it kind of put your logo or put your name and stuff on it?
Yeah. No, I was in, had a day off in Arizona. I think we were in Phoenix, and I went to like this occult store, like oddities and stuff with, you know, like, preserves, skulls and all that. And next door there was a perfumery, and I'm really self-conscious about my scent and body odor. So like when I'm hugging people after a show, I always like will spray some cologne on beforehand. And so a lot of people would always say like, oh, you smell really nice for like having just gotten off stage. And so when I was in this perfumery, I was like, oh my gosh, that would be so great if when people told me that I smelled nice, I could be like, oh yeah, you can buy it right over there.
right.
So I was like, well, they did custom scents there. But I wanted to do it myself. I just kind of had a micro obsession. So got like my wholesaler's license with them and started buying ingredients in bulk and just kind of experimenting and trying to find something that I would wear, something similar to some of the colognes that I wore at the time. And yeah, stumbled onto one that was like, yeah, this is the one. Luckily, like my wife was having like a girl's party, and so there were like eight women in the living room that I was able to kind of do a taste, like a smell test with. Had a couple of options. I wasn't really sure which one, and I went with the one that all the girls liked. And
It's
she talked to you
probably the
guys,
best
but
bet.
yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's a great idea, though. You can get it right over there.
Yeah, you're the I have to say, I'm pretty sure you're the first band that I've seen do that. I've seen barbecue sauce, I've seen beer, sandals, never cologne. Normally, like you said, you go up to somebody after a show, like they're stinky, sweaty. You're like, "Oh, good show, man!" And they turn around, and you got that like fucking wet dripping all over you, or
and that's
whatever.
expected. Like, you can't even get mad. That's why everybody's like, "Damn, you smell awesome!" You know, like, it's just like it's so rare.
Other bands take note. You should all have your own cologne.
Or don't take note so you can.
Or at least get like a hand towel, pat yourself down a little.
Yeah.
I'll remain stinky.
Jonathan, earlier you said that when you were a kid, you weren't really allowed to listen to too much music. How did you start getting into music then?
I had a friend, so I went to like a private Christian academy, and then there's this kid when we were like 13 or 14 who transferred, like moved to town, you know, and came to the school. His name's Dustin, and Dustin Hall. And he listened to punk rock, and he introduced me to like Against All Authority and Total Chaos and all this stuff that like I didn't have any idea what was going on, but I knew that like on Friday nights when we would get pizza and be locked in his garage with a couple other kids, that we would just blast it and kick the shit out of each other, and it felt like nothing else I had ever experienced. So just got into that. I would wait until my parents went to sleep, and listen to like alternative radio. A girl in my when I was left that school, a girl in my journalism class, was she would always sit with her headphones on, and one day I just asked her what she was listening to, and she was like, "Deftones." And I was like, "What can I hear?" So she put on My Own Summer. And having never listened to the Deftones and hearing My Own Summer for the first time through headphones, it was like a religious experience. Just the way that the snare just like first comes in. And yeah, I was just I'd listened to like distorted guitars before, but it really that song and that moment, my senior year in high school, was probably the moment that I really, really just fell in love with the feeling of like just something really, really heavy.
Yeah, and that's a cool one to listen to in headphones too, because Chino really like throws his vocal around a lot in the mix.
Oh yeah. I
I
mean,
mean, he
and
does
the way that
always, but like that one specifically, like I was playing the song in my head when you said that, and it definitely there's a lot of left and right mix to it.
Yeah, I was just thinking
Well,
about too when I first heard it, and I was pretty young and also in headphones and a little Discman, dude. It's pretty gnarly to hear that for the first time.
yeah. Well, and you're introduced to like Stephen Carpenter's like that guitar line first, right? With the drums. First you get the drum by itself, the do-king, do-did-it, right? But the bass hasn't come in yet. It sounds so fucking big, just the guitar and the drums, and you don't even realize that the bass isn't in there until this fucking crushing chorus comes in with the vocals, and you're at that moment you're just like, you know when something already is like giving you chills and you're like, "Oh, this is good, this is good," but then it goes even further than you thought it could, and you're just
Yeah.
changed.
It's like that,
And when you're so young, you can have those experiences. Like now, if I have an experience like that, I'm just like, "Wow, that was such a cool experience." But like when you're like 17, 18, you have an experience like that, like it changes like your DNA.
Yeah.
Oh, most definitely, man. That shifts your whole outlook on things, dude, for sure.
Yeah.
It did us. I guarantee it, you know?
I've spent most of my life in musical search of recreating that feeling over and over. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's different for everybody, you know, the song or the band or whatever. It's what's so awesome about it.
But it's great when it happens. It just doesn't happen as much as it used to. Like when you're younger and everything's fresh, you're like, oh, this is awesome. This is awesome. And now it's like, this sounds exactly like that. This sounds like
now
this.
You're lucky if you get like it every that. Like few years.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like a handful of things that you're like, wow, this was phenomenal.
If it can make me stomp around my room, then I'm good. I'll still do
that's your level of approval.
Then I'm like, oh, dude, all right, cha-ching, and then I put it in the good side.
Do you stomp enough to make your record skip?
I do enough to make my kid laugh at me and fucking tell me
I'm like, well, shit, like, what if your arm bounces up?
What's wrong with you? Grow up.
What about you, Kevin? What got you into music?
Oh, man. Honestly, I mean, being like a latchkey kid and also hanging around with like older kids was kind of my upbringing and whatnot. A lot of like skate punk kids and started going to shows real early. First show I went to with parents or something was Henry Rollins at probably like 13 years old, got in a pit. Jumped off, slapped Henry Rollins on the back, jumped off.
Nice.
That's a fucking awesome first show story.
That is a fucking sweet show story.
My mom had me when she was 16. My dad was like 18. They'd have MTV on all the time, you know, back when MTV played music, you know?
Yep.
And so all that 80s stuff was around me at all times, you know? And then in the 90s, I started playing music. And like I said, going to shows. From there, it was like, so I always had all that 80s new wave, goth, post-punk stuff like in the background from the parents, you know, and obviously classic rock and whatnot. But then in the 90s, it was all about like my kind of music, you know, it was like punk stuff, grunge stuff, obviously, you know, the great like hip hop stuff of that era, Wu-Tang and, I mean, the Beastie Boys and, you know, different like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul and all that stuff like. Really was like what was interesting, and from there, like, you know, you just, like I said, you kind of, it slows down a little, but you every, you know, few years you get something that comes out that's just great. And like we said earlier, like moving, pushing, you know, pushing the envelope and pushing the art forward, or, you know, the sound, whatever that is, forward, you know.
So most definitely, man.
I think the last band that really hit me like that is a band called Show Me the Body out of New York. That's like a kind of throwback to like pure hardcore with like swagger, New York, you know, like lineage type group. I don't know if y'all heard them, but they're a phenomenal new band, newish.
I haven't, but I'm assuming Jeremy probably has.
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, that's surprising. Yeah.
Not that one. There's so many bands really coming out right now that make me stomp around my room, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, Show Me the Body's one of those for sure.
That's awesome.
They're very hot.
Yeah, I just looked them up and added a couple things. But before we start wrapping stuff up here, do you guys have anything that you would like to plug or say or add or anything like that before we finish?
We got a fundraiser for the European tour at our website, trying to raise some money for the upfront costs there and get some more records printed and some shirts out there.
More cologne.
So, right on. Donate.
Yeah.
Is the I see it. Okay. I was looking for the link for it because I'll put it in the episode description so anybody can go right to it from there.
Oh, word. That'd be amazing. Yeah, the link is in the five links at the top of our Instagram, and it's also on our homepage of our website, cool. Which is urbanheatband.com.
I'll have that in the episode description also, you guys' Instagram and all that stuff too.
Amazing, appreciate it.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it sounds like upcoming few months, like you guys have a lot planned, a lot going on, it's going to be busy, lots of touring, so hopefully like spreads the good word about your music, and we'll continue to try to do the same.
And thank you so very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for hopping on, man. I appreciate it.
Of course, this has been great.
Normally, yeah. We ask people a question at the end of the episode, but you guys sound like you're kind of into a bit of everything. But just for, you know, for the sake of the show, we'll fucking ask it. We always ask people, like, what is something that they're into musically that people wouldn't expect, like, outside of the genre of music that you play?
I'll go first. I love Jason Isbell.
Okay. He was in Drive-By Truckers for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's basically like an Americana country artist type, but like, I think he's probably, in my opinion, like the best lyrical songwriter of this era for sure.
Yeah, I haven't followed much of his solo stuff. I've heard a couple of the records, but I remember him being a great writer just in general.
Yeah. Was that even the question? Was it an artist that we were naming or like something not?
No, just an artist, band, whatever.
Okay, you know. Man. I thought.
You got it, dude. That was perfect.
Yeah, I don't know if mine would be unexpected, you know? I'm really into Run the Jewels. I've really been enjoying Run the Jewels when I'm working out and stuff. And I listen to like a lot of acoustic, like cello music, like instrumental cello music around the house and things. But yeah, I don't know if any of those would be like unexpected. Oh, I have. I mean, I have some guilty.
The cello music would be a little unexpected. But...
Okay, good. I was gonna say I have some guilty pleasures, but I'd rather not of myself.
Oh, dude, you should totally give us at least one. You gotta like clean the house to like Britney Spears or something. Something.
No, I will. There's a couple of Limp Bizkit tracks that definitely get into my playlist. Yeah,
that's good. That's good.
Man, I will say, like, I grew up at that time, and, like, more people than not liked Limp Bizkit. Like, I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Like, there were more fans than who are the deniers right now. Like, I listened to that shit at the time. Like,
well,
I'm not afraid
I mean, they're having another, they're having a moment now. Like,
yeah. That shit
I mean,
was
now it's
huge, man.
Enough time has passed that they're cool, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Make No Face is, like, on tour with them.
Of them. I've seen that, yeah. But I remember, like, when they were up, like, playing Family Values Tour and stuff. I mean, I didn't go. I was too young, but I had the poster in my room.
That was really
was
not
Was Family Values Tour, was that before or after Woodstock?
I think that was before.
Right after, maybe?
Because it was, like
90. Woodstock 94.
I think, it would have been after then. So it would have been, like, 97.
Well, no, they played the Woodstock 99. So that was before Family Values was before 99?
I want to say it was 97, but because it had, I remember like Ice Cube was on there and a couple other stuff. I'm trying to reimagine.
Why did I say Woodstock 94?
Well, they had two of them, but Limp Bizkit wasn't on 94. They wasn't even around yet, I don't think. No, they didn't come out to like 96 or so.
I remember when I was a kid and like the first time I seen the fucking Nookie video and Westmoreland's eyes were like all blacked out.
Yeah.
And I was, my child version of myself was like, oh my God, he took the insides of sunglasses out and like shoved them in his eyes. Cause I didn't know how the fuck he did it. So
when I was on a school bus, on a transfer bus from the junior high to the high school, every day, Faith, they would play that song.
Yeah.
Off the first record every day, dude.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Would that, like, give me something to break song? Like, the smash everything or whatever? Like
$3 bill, y'all, is where I was like, I stopped right there.
He did some stuff with Method Man.
Yep.
Oh, I remember that. And I was like.
I stopped with the chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water.
Yeah, that's where everybody was done at that point.
But if you were a collector out there and you have an OG press of that.
Yeah, that thing's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, buy a car.
Good shit, huh?
But all right, guys, we'll let you get going, and we appreciate you taking the time to sit and talk with us. It was cool to hear about the band, the albums, you know, shows and everything.
Yeah, it was great meeting both of you, and I appreciate your time.
Likewise.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to make it in September. I mean, if we can swing it, like, yeah, we'll definitely come down there to check out the show and get a hold of you ahead of time.
Yeah, we'll keep in contact for sure.
Yeah, hit us up.
Yeah, there's nothing like getting to meet folks in person that you've done stuff like this with. So we look forward to it.
Cool. All right. Have a good one, guys. I appreciate it again.
All right, cheers.
Late.